Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Rotten Tomatoes is Wrong. My name is Mark Ellis, and what a special episode we have for everyone listening or watching today. My co-host, Jacqueline Coley, is going to be joining in just a little bit, as is our very special guest from the hit podcast Medium Popcorn, which you can also check out on YouTube if you want to watch it. It's Brandon Collins, who's a big Nicolas Cage fan, and really, who isn't? We love Nick Cage because he's a great actor, whether it's in a rom-com, an action movie, a heartfelt drama, and he also goes for it in movies that are really running the gamut from super fresh, like Pig and Moonstruck, all the way down to, yeah, he's got a couple zero percenters out there. So we're going to be talking about all things Nick Cage, particularly those movies that he has that are rotten on the tomato meter, but we think maybe Rotten Tomatoes is wrong about those flicks, one of which is Con Air, the action smash that was the same summer as Face Off. He got Con Air, then he had Face Off like the next month. And so while Face Off is sitting up there pretty at fresh, 92%, Con Air is rotten at 55%. And so now before we're joined by Jacqueline Coley and Brandon Collins, we're going to turn it over to Tim Ryan. He's our review curation manager, and he's an expert at all these things here at Rotten Tomatoes. So he's going to tell us what critics were saying about Con Air at the time of its release. I know what I was saying. I really wanted that hair. At the time, seemed like a good idea. Tim, what did the critics say at the time?
2 minutes with Tim.
Normally, I want you to give our podcast your undivided attention. But given today's subject, I want you to press pause and immediately read Dana Stevens' fantastic 2010 Slate essay, The Heat-Seeking Panther, which is both hilarious and insightful in its attempts to grapple with Nicolas Cage's fascinating career. No spoilers or anything, but the closest she comes to a conclusion is this. When Cage takes on these outsized B-movie roles, Stevens writes, I don't believe for a moment that he is just nodding wearily to his agent and his accountant. I think he's fulfilling a vision, albeit one that looks inscrutable from the outside, of choosing roles in the kind of movies he himself loves. When it comes to the critics, Nicolas Cage's filmography varies wildly. His worst reviewed is Left Behind from 2014, which is rotten at 0%. His best-reviewed movie is from last year. Pig is certified fresh at 97%. Into the Spider-Verse, which features Cage in a fantastic cameo, is also at 97%, but it's not really a Nicolas Cage movie per se. Also, Red Rock West from 1993 is at 97%, but it doesn't have as many reviews. We're talking about Con Air today, and it's right smack dab in the middle. It's rotten at 55% on the tomato meter with 65 reviews, though it does have a 75% audience score. So what did the critics have to say? In a Rotten review, Wade Major of Box Office Magazine wrote that Con Air falls well below the stature of its aspirations, too often substituting bombast for believability before finally plunging headlong into the ridiculous. However, in a fresh review, Dwayne Burge of The Hollywood Reporter wrote, packed high with explosive action and loaded with high-stakes jeopardy, Con Air charts a genuinely sound narrative course, although it hits some turbulence before it hits the cinematic jackpot. The Rotten Tomatoes critics' consensus reads, Con Air won't win any awards for believability, and all involved seem cheerfully aware of it, making some of this blockbuster action outing's biggest flaws fairly easy to forgive. So that's Con Air. And I think it's worth noting that they somehow managed to get every Mark and Jacqueline in the universe onto this one podcast, and then somehow managed to let them take it over, and then somehow managed to stick me right smack in the middle. Back to you, folks.
What a time it was to enjoy action movies back in the mid-90s. Ah, fun fact, director Simon West. Actually, I'll tell you what else Simon West, who directed Con Air, did. After we have our exclusive interview with Brandon Collins and Jacqueline Coley joining me right now. As promised, we are now joined by our very special guest who, Jacqueline, really does it all. Stand-up comedy, producer, podcaster. He's the co-host of Medium Popcorn and Drunk Black History, and he's an active member of the African American Film Critics Association. Brandon Collins, when do you get to take a nap? Do you have any naps in your day, or are you just always busy telling jokes, talking movies?
It's funny, I just started taking naps, but even when I'm taking a nap, I'm still either listening to music or I'm listening to a podcast. Like my brain never stops. It's just, it's just always going, man. I'm always thinking of unique ideas or potential shows. And it's just the way it's been. Cause I was, you know, when I was 6 years old, my mom put me in front of a TV and just let me watch TV shows and movies all day. And my brain has just never slowed down ever since.
That was that kind of seems like how Jacqueline and I came up into the world too, especially with entertainment. Do you remember the first time you saw Nick Cage? The first time that you like mentally could recognize, hey, that is a prominent actor, and I think I like this guy.
Yep, and inappropriately, it was 1997's Face Off. My mom, you know, I was a good kid, so my mom would take me to go see R-rated movies with her. And I remember, you know, the opening scene where Nicolas Cage is in the priest costume and he puts his hand on that choir girl's butt. And I just remember being like, I know who Nick Cage is now. Like, this is disturbing. Like, who is this guy? And then, I've been following his career ever since.
Jacqueline, what's your first Nick Cage movie? Do you remember your very first experience with the Cage?
I think it was actually Moonstruck for me. Because this was in, it was definitely Moonstruck because this was still in the, like, we watch the Oscars every year situation in my family house. So as much as my mother likes to pretend that this was not a career she set me forth on, I would be like, well, those days watching TCM and the Oscars beg to differ. But I remember Moonstruck, and I remember the clip that was oftentimes used for that movie was him with like my hand. And I was like, oh, he's going there, huh? And I was like, this guy is a lot. And then I think I saw Valley Girl shortly after that. But yeah, I think the very first one for me was Moonstruck.
Yeah. So I remember the Moonstruck poster at Video Update, but I remember the first time I acknowledged that this Nick Cage guy was like an actor. It was Wild at Heart because I didn't rent it. I like back then I'm just looking for anything that looked like Star Wars. And so my sister, my older sister had rented Wild at Heart, this David Lynch movie with Nick Cage and Laura Dern. It was before I knew her from Jurassic Park. And like, I just caught glimpses of that movie. And I was like, I don't know what adults do with their free time, but I hope mom and dad aren't doing this because this is nuts. This is crazy.
That's like how I feel about every Nicolas Cage movie. That's why I'm so excited to talk about, because there's very few Nicolas Cage movies where I'm like, that was quiet. That was calm. Like, you know, it's even Mandy, which is probably his most quiet one in regards to
definitely
like,
definitely not calm.
Yeah, it's not calm, but it's just like, you know, very eerie, the whole movie. Even that's like Cuckoo Bananas when you're watching it. You're like, oh, Nicolas Cage is in his underwear now screaming, one of the few lines of dialogue he has.
Yeah, you're still not taking a nap during something like Mandy. And what's interesting about our three picks for like the first time we really knew this was Nick Cage is that those are all fresh movies. Now, y'all went super fresh. Moonstruck is 94%. Face Off is 92%. Wild at Heart for me, 67%, which is one below what I consider to be not only the greatest Nick Cage action movie, but also the second best action movie of the 90s, The Rock, is 68%. But let's start talking about some of these movies that we're basing our whole show around. Is Rotten Tomatoes wrong about Nick Cage flicks? Because he's got so many rotten movies, some of which are very fairly rotten. He's got a couple 0%ers that I think deserve to be 0%, but he's got a lot of really good stuff that just isn't redeemed in the critics' eyes for whatever. So, Brandon, you have the honor. Kick us off here. What is Rotten Tomatoes wrong about when it comes to Nicolas Cage? Where do you want to start?
I mean, I want to start The Wicker Man. I think The Wicker Man is one of the most fun viewing experiences of my life. I was always surprised. And then when I watched the behind the scenes, like extras and stuff, and Nicolas Cage is doing interviews, I'm like, oh, this movie was just all like cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs. No one was on the level when they were making this film. Like, And it just has amazing sound bites. Like on my movie podcast, we do like,
oh my God. Oh my God.
It's just so good. The bees.
Wait a minute. He came with his own drops, ladies and gentlemen. Mm-hmm. He came with his own sound effects. Brandon, sir, you came with it. I have to say, you're the first guest to ever do that. And so I have to make sure everyone knows that was not us. Man came prepared.
I have so many Nicolas Cage quotes. I mean, it's, so Wicker Man and then Trespass. Trespass is my favorite one that I know, like I vehemently believe Rotten Tomatoes got completely wrong because everyone gives it 110%, even though they didn't have to and they shouldn't have. And it's just amazing. Like Joel Schumacher directed the hell out of this weird, campy Lifetime thriller with Nicolas Cage and Nicole Kidman as a married couple. It's so crazy.
It's 11% and The Wicker Man is 15%. So I guess like my question here is, particularly with Wicker Man, is Wicker Man actually something that you feel like is a fresh movie? Or is it just something where it's so fun to watch? Is it like so bad it's good? Or do you think it's actually like a good movie?
I think, because again, I watched the like the behind the scenes and the commentary and stuff. I think knowing what their intention was, I actually think it's a really good movie. Because they delivered.
Jack, on, you agree?
They delivered on what their vision was for the, you know, the performances and the vibe of the movie.
Wicker Man or Trespass? Because I have different opinions. If it's The Wicker Man, I do think it was put forth in earnest. I just think that the earnest was guided by some misguided people. Trespass, I legitimately don't know. Like, Trespass seems like a movie that they need to do like an oral history because it has like A-list caliber talent slumming it. And it's bad. It's so bad. It's like, that was a movie that probably was meant to go to a studio. They sold off to somebody crazy. And it just has some weird story because there's no way that those people signed up for what they ended up with. Does that make sense?
Yeah, there was a movie that they set out to make, or at least that is on the page, and then it becomes something very different. And with The Wicker Man, I do feel like they wanted to be as bonkers as they possibly could. Yes. The movie, I don't think was necessarily marketed that way. It was just marketed as like a straight horror movie. So I remember seeing it for the first time being like, this is not like, this is just another level of crazy and not because like this movie came out, I think a couple of years after The Others, you know, which is a horror movie that does the normal horror movie stuff. It builds up and we have creepy reveals and The Wicker Man just gets so bonkers for so many different reasons. I don't know if it's fresh, but man, is it rewatchable.
It's gotta be fresh for when he's flipping over the kid's mask, trying to find the kid. And then, he puts on a bear costume and goes up to the woman that recruited him. He's like, hey, it's me. It's just, there's so many crazy moments in that film.
Also though, too, like what's crazy about the whole idea of it is it's really ripping up. Like, it's like, that was that time period's the very first Wicker Man. Like that was that time period's Midsommar. That's what it was set up to be, was just this like, oh, you've gotten caught up in some stuff you did not ken. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you don't know what you're messing with here. And you're going to go, it's going to spiral out of control with some very strange white people that are all committed to the same assignment. And you did not know the assignment. And so in that respect, I actually understand why they went bonkers. I just think, I don't know. Nicolas Cage is not the type of dude that I think you should tell the movie is bonkers about. I think you should just tell Nicolas Cage it's straightforward because that's what Mandy is. Nicolas Cage is actually fairly straightforward in that movie and everything around him is bonkers. And that's what sells it.
Yeah, he's the same Will in Willy's Wonderland. The film that just came out not too long ago. He plays it completely straight and everything around him is madness.
Is that the Color of Space one? Or is that... Oh, no, I know which one you're talking about. Yes.
It's the one with the animatronics come alive.
Yes. It's kind of hard to do it. Like, Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent. That was a Sundance film that's just now coming out. I saw that there. And trust me when I say, like, Lordy, y'all just wait.
Are we having fun with that, Jacqueline? I mean, look, that's one of the reasons why we're celebrating the breadth of Mr. Cage's work is because of this new movie he's got coming out where it's so meta, where it's just him playing himself for this, you know, international gangster. Is it, Are you allowed to tell us how you feel about that movie?
So I'm getting confused. Prisoners of Ghostland is the one that was at Sundance. That was the one that was at
Don't
Sundance.
Don't get me excited it's, like that.
No, Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent. I'm not allowed to say. So maybe I have seen it, but I don't think I'm allowed. I literally just remembered. I'm like, oh, I'm not allowed to say. But so next question. Go to somebody else.
I'll bail you out right now because it's very interesting that Brandon is going into is going Wicker Man and Trespass early in the show because I feel like there's a Nick Cage that we knew who was like the rom-com guy who would occasionally do a David Lynch movie. And then he had his action star days in the 90s with an incredible trio from The Rock to Con Air, which we'll talk about in a little bit, and then Face Off. And then Wicker Man comes out in 2005, I believe. And then National Treasure Book of Secrets is 2006. And it seems like right around that time is when we started embracing this new Nick Cage that was just so weird and kooky and zany. And it started like, it was like, we didn't know when his real life ended and when his screen life began. And then you have Trespass by 2011. And that's a year after The Sorcerer's Apprentice, which is, I think, unfairly rotten at 40% because it's such a fun movie. And the movie did like over $200 million worldwide. But The Sorcerer's Apprentice, I remember being in the theater and being like, this is who this guy is now. I know he's got great performances in him, but this is who this guy is. He is just so out of his mind, over the top, yet he's still working within the framework of the film, if that makes sense, Brandon.
Yeah, he has such an amazing filmography because he doesn't say no to an assignment, but he always understands the assignment, right? Like, even like his voice work into the Spider-Verse, I'm like, man, Nicolas Cage is a national treasure. Like, no pun intended. I'm like, because on our podcast, we frequently talk about Denzel Washington to us is the best actor of all time. But then we'll see a Nicolas Cage movie, we'll be like, wait a minute. Like, when I saw The Rock, I mean, The Rock is probably his most serious, like his most normal like action role, but you know, The Rock and Con Air, which we'll talk about in a second, because I think that Rotten Tomatoes is wrong about that. He just has such amazing range, and you can't help but smile when he's on screen. You just know you're going to get something different.
Jacqueline, I got a comparison here. Okay, so I'm a huge, huge basketball fan, and as we have March Madness, then we get into the NBA playoffs. Nick Cage is the player who's not on the best team. He's on an underdog team, but he's the guy you got to put three bodies on him because he can get hot. And like if Denzel is a blue blood, like a Duke or a Kansas or a Carolina, Nick Cage is just that other team that just showed. Nick Cage is Gonzaga. He just shows up and could beat anybody at any time because he's just that talented, but we just never know what kind of movie we're going to get. And so you have these movies like Into the Spider-Verse, and I would cite Joe as the movie that sort of taught me that Nick Cage can still deliver an Oscar-worthy performance. Anytime he gets out of bed, he's capable of doing that. And we saw it again this past year with Pig, Jacqueline.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/Wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/Wondery.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Yeah, no, Pig, that's the one I think of. Mandy used to be that one, too. I think for me, if I'm being really honest, the thing with Nick Cage is the fact that he can be with anyone, but I always use this analogy. Nick can do what Leo does. Leo can't do what Nick does. Do you know what I mean? Like he can play in other people's court, but other people can't play in his. And there's another actor who I say is like this. And it's funny that I mentioned Leo because Leo is going to be taking over a role that he originated. And that's Mads Mikkelsen. Mads Mikkelsen is like a modern day Renaissance Viking. Like that dude is on a different level. He can dance like Fred Astaire. And like given the right amount of scoring underneath it will be the most sinister villain that you've ever seen. But then he also can be this like charismatic sex symbol that you're just like, yeah, get it. Like, you know what I mean? He does what the other girls can't do. Like, that's just the best way to put it. And I feel like Nick Cage and him both have that very similar energy. And you need to go check out some of Mads' more like, I would say, underground, especially European foreign language work, like his work in his native tongue to really, I think, encompass that. But Lord, is it good.
Yeah, during the beginning of the pandemic, I binged Hannibal and I was like, oh, I'm seeing anything this guy does after this.
Exactly.
I'm doing so anything he puts out, I'm watching.
He can do Hannibal Lecter and he can do Another Round. He can do the bad guy in like Grindelwald and Doctor Strange. And he can do this recent like one that he did, which is basically like Ravenous set in the Danish wilderness. Like, oh, what's the name of it? It just came out. I'll look it up in a second. But yeah, no, it's that kind of energy. And I think that's why Nicolas Cage will always be... And there's so many other examples of it. Like, sure, you could have gotten Mark Wahlberg to do National Treasure, but Mark Wahlberg can't do Mandy. And there's so many, like, you could take the action stars that he does it better. You can take the more serious dramatic actors that he does it. You can take the straight up comedic, weird stuff that he does with stuff like Adaptation or Matchstick Men, you know?
And you could also look at something like Face Off, because... With Face Off, him and John Travolta clearly had a ball imitating each other. But I still and Travolta's great in the movie, but when Travolta becomes the villain of the film, it's like he's having fun as Nick Cage, but he can't do that for an entire movie and put it on his back the way that Nick Cage could. And that was, again, I mean, you're talking about the heyday of Nick Cage as an action star. So I remember being in the theater. I don't think I was even sick. I think all my friends were 16 and I didn't have a driver's license yet. And so there was a discussion and, you know, don't do this in the theater, kids, just focus on the movie. You can stay out past curfew, but we were all sort of, it was like seven of us. We're all debating how much trouble individually we're going to get in if we miss curfew, because we don't want to leave the rock early because this movie's just too much fun. And so a couple guys bolted, me and two of my friends didn't. We did get in trouble, but it was worth it because we saw The Rock and the greatness that is The Rock. And then the very next year, you followed up with Con Air, which as Brandon and I feel like, Jacqueline, I believe you're on the same page as us. It's 55% rotten, which is fresh adjacent, but not nearly fresh enough. That movie is so much fun. Even repeat viewing, like if you take it seriously as an action movie, you can certainly look at elements of it as a comedy. But if you just take it seriously as an action movie, Brandon, it's a great, great 90s action flick.
As amazing quotes, put the bunny in back in the box. Like what? But he always commits. That's what's like, you know, to Jacqueline's point, Leonardo could not do his twin role in an adaptation. Like, as charismatic and as much as he's a leading man, he could not do the weirdness that's required there. Even Face Off, when Nicolas Cage is playing himself as a tortured John Travolta, it's just chef's kiss. You can't, yeah. I couldn't do that mentally as a performer.
And especially after he starts off so crazy, just dancing around to the Madonna video in that, like, this is what was so crazy about the 90s. They loved, like, Catholic iconography. I remember this very prevalent in, like, Romeo and Juliet and Face Off. Like, they loved all of that stuff. And I was just like, this is, like, a weird look. But, hey, everybody looks like they're having fun. Everybody looks like they're having fun. Least of all, Nicolas Cage. I do also, you guys mentioned Con Air. I have to mention this one too about Con Air. Is what's crazy about that one is like the heart of that movie is still like the family aspect of him. And there, like when the Diane Warren penned first Leanne Rimes sang, eventually Trisha Yearwood song, sang How Do I Live? And he's walking with that torn, beat up bunny. The movie has to sell. When he hands her the bunny and is like, I'm sorry, I got it messed up. Like, it has to sell in that moment. And he has to be able to, I think, solidify both and rock that really great mullet hair. Because we haven't even discussed Nick Cage hair, because that's a whole nother podcast episode.
Yeah, his hair in that is next level. It's funny you bring up the song that ended up winning a Grammy.
Yes.
How Shall I Live? So At first, it was recorded by Leanne Rimes. She was 15 years old at the time. And then Trisha Yearwood covered it. They both released their version of the song on the same day. Here's the rub. Leanne Rimes performed the song at the Grammys. Trisha Yearwood's version ended up winning at the Grammys. So Nick Cage is giving everybody careers here. His movies are just a springboard for everyone, including, as y'all alluded to, just a great hairdressing team.
I do agree with that. Also, shout out to the fact that both Diane Warren, Leanne Rimes, and Trisha Yearwood were put behind basically some men who didn't like things. So the reason why Trisha did her recording is because the Leanne Rimes version, which, as you said, was recorded first, was going to be the single. The producers of the movie, which the song is being penned for, were like, we don't like her version. And the other little comedy of that is her version, because they didn't like her version for the movie.
Right.
But the Leanne version was the hit. And Leanne laughed that shit all the way to the bank. So I think they both win in a certain way, maybe. I don't know.
I'm definitely added to her Spotify paycheck because I listen to that song probably once a week on shuffle. It's a good 90s like action ballad.
Yeah, it's the perfect song for any occasion. And if you're looking at favorite scenes that are in Con Air, there's so many to choose from because you have so many great actors in that movie. Like, that's the thing that people forget about Con Air is it makes a great gif and it's funny to reference. It's like Clue for villains on a plane because you have all these villains that could end up being the main boss at any point. You got John Malkovich on your plane. You got Ving Rhames on your plane. You got Dave Chappelle on your plane. And then down below, you have Colm Meaney, you have John Cusack chasing everybody, and then obviously Nicolas Cage. So Brandon, what is the scene in Con Air that you're like, boom, that's a great action movie?
Just the beginning when like he comes back and he's like going to the bar where Monica Potter's working, and like that whole scene is just cheesy, and then he gets into fight and it's like he's going to jail. I'm like, oh yeah, this is gonna be fun. This is gonna be a fun ride. But also obviously the ending with like the fire truck chase through Vegas, it's just so insane. And then John Cusack's got his little motorcycle. And I'm like, there's no way he would be able to just jump on a motorcycle like that. But that's what you get from these action movies. And Nicolas Cage headlining most of them is just phenomenal. Considering that he does that, he could do animated movies. He can do comedy. Like, he's so versatile. And I think that that's why he doesn't get enough credit, because it's really hard to do that. And not enough people want to shout out
his affinity for filmmaking and just doing whatever it takes to make the good movie, I think endears him to pretty much anyone. And that's the reason why, like, we have this great quote from Mark Hoffmeyer talking about Nicolas Cage from Ethan Hawke, where he's like, I think he's one of the few people in history of acting that's really changed the form. And I don't think an actor like Ethan Hawke says that unless he's seen him, like, put up the goods. And I will always look at Leaving Las Vegas as the perfect example. You made us fall in love with somebody who literally is killing themselves slowly over the course of 2.5 hours, to the point, it's almost like the second season of Fleabag. This is the perfect version of the love story that these two are ever going to be willing to achieve.
There's something about Nick Cage who is just, he's in movies that give female singers tremendous hits, because Sheryl Crow got a great one out of Leaving Las Vegas.
Movie,
I mean, obviously that's a fresh movie, 91%. And that's the movie he won his Oscar for. He was also nominated for adaptation. If we go back to like the things that Rotten Tomatoes is wrong about, Jacqueline, do you have a movie that you circle and you're like, okay, Nick Cage needs more justice for this movie?
If I had to circle the movie that Nicolas Cage needs more justice for, I mean, I think I'd go with probably Gone in 60 Seconds, just because that is another one that is hella rewatchable. I've thought long days about what it was like for Vinnie Jones to be on the set of that movie set. Like, legitimately, I've spent a significant amount of time, because that was like Angelina Jolie was like still wearing Billy Bob Thornton's blood and stuff at that point. Nick Cage is doing Nick Cage. I don't know what Delroy Lindo was probably thinking on the set of that movie. Like, it just seems like it was a weird group of people. Giovanni Ribisi, who, if folks don't know about his history, he's got a few. There's a lot. So, yeah, no, I would say Gone in 60 Seconds. That movie is hella rewatchable. Great soundtrack. It's Cars. I love movies about cars. The fact that the car is a character in that movie is just so great. I love, love, love it. And it's funny as hell. So I would say Gone in 60 Seconds.
It's 25% rotten. We get another all-time great Nicolas Cage character name with that one, Brandon. He plays Randall Memphis Reigns. And the dude, first of all, the thing that sold me on Gone in 60 Seconds, I remember being in the theater. I might have been in the theater for Face Off. I can't remember, but there was a trailer, like a teaser trailer for a new Nick Cage movie called Gone in 60 Seconds. And the trailer was counting down from 60 seconds. And it's like, and basically the movie theater was telling you that in the time it took you to get your popcorn, get a drink and find your seats, your car has been stolen. So it made everybody panic for the rest of whatever the feature was, because we're just thinking, oh, somebody's got two. Nick Cage is stealing cars in 60 seconds. I got to sit through this thing for 2 hours before I go check on my car to see if it's still parked in the garage. My Honda Civic, there's no way it's still going to be there.
I love it.
pretty intense advertising.
I was just thinking about the 60 seconds, though. I was like, I don't know if I would have liked that. I don't know if I would have watched the movie afterwards because I'm too paranoid.
It's the greatest premise, though, because it's 50. I think you got to steal 50 cars in a night or something like that.
Yeah.
There's nothing more fun. And doing some like reading on the making of that movie, Nicolas Cage loves driving to the point where some of the insurance folks saw some of the dailies, and the next day they were on set because they wanted to make sure that Nick Cage wasn't doing too much driving. But Brandon, you feel it in that movie is just like, it's one fast car chase. And I think that you could see that and you could say, all right, Fast and Furious wishes it was that. The first movie does. And then from that, Fast and Furious folks are like, this is where our franchise goes.
Yeah, I mean, Gone in 60 Seconds, I remember seeing that in the movie theater with some friends. And I had a huge crush on Angelina Jolie ever since, Hackers that came out in the mid-90s?
Yeah.
So I was going to see it for that. Nicolas Cage wasn't the big draw for me at that point, even though like I liked The Rock and Face Off and stuff. So I went for Angelina Jolie. I liked Giovanni Ribisi because I was a fan of him, starting with Boiler Room and then Saving Private Ryan. And so I was like, okay, these are a lot of people I like. Chai McBride, who was on Boston Public at the time, I was a fan of him. And he has a great line in this where the young black actor who like played the gangster that was part of the crew, he was like, oh, you look like a ghetto Smurf. I remember like laughing at that that joke even as like a teenager.
But the
movie is just... it's just anchored by Nicolas Cage in this, like, I'm trying to save my little brother, but this plan doesn't make any sense. So this guy is definitely going to kill us at the end. And then Angelina Jolie and him, they don't even have chemistry. It's just like they're both kind of hot people talking to each other in this weird movie. It's a wild time.
All right, so I'm looking at the Nick Cage resume because I want to be generous. I want to let y'all have your Nick Cage movies that are rotten, that should be fresh. And I'm looking at what's left, and there's still so many to pick from, folks. So I have one that might surprise people a little bit because it's not Nicolas Cage action-centric. It's not Captain Curly's Mandolin. Sorry, everyone. One of maybe my favorite Nick Cage movie that is rotten, that definitely deserves to be fresh, is an underrated Christmas movie, and that would be The Family Man, where he plays a guy who he wakes up and he's super wealthy, but he's alone and he's lonely, just works all the time. So it's sort of like a modern day kind of like mix of It's a Wonderful Life, and he's got a little bit of an Ebenezer Scrooge to him. And then Don Cheadle is sort of his angel and swaps him with the wife that he could have had he stayed with his college sweetheart, and they started a family together. So the next day he wakes up and it's Christmas morning, and all of a sudden Tay Leone's his wife, he's got kids, he's got a dog, he's got neighbors, and this is his just mundane suburban life, and he's trying to fight it for so long. And then we go through the movie, and the movie is what the movie is, but it's only 53%. Jacqueline, am I crazy for thinking this movie is super fresh? Is this not a fresh movie in your eyes?
It's not that it's not a fresh movie in my eyes. I just know that I don't have the same kind of love and affection you do for it. It's not that it's bad,
though. He goes full Cage in it.
It gets to go full Nick Cage in it, but the YouTube clips will be there without me having to sit through the rest. Sorry. Does that mean? I think it was mean.
It's very insulting to my movie. Brandon, are you going to pile on?
I can't agree with that, man. Like, I think the other performances kind of brought it down for me. I remember Taya Leone, who I was a fan of. I remember like I wasn't a fan of that performance. I thought the movie also, like, even as a teenager, I was like, this feels manipulative. Like, I don't feel like this is genuine. These feelings I'm supposed to have about the character. And I think that that's why, like, I can't jump on the bus with you, man.
It's an easy manipulation. Like, I get it. Like, and no offense, Mark, maybe it hits you different nowadays.
Because I'm like Nick Cage when he wakes up the first time, and I'm happy being that guy.
Yeah. And maybe you're like, well, maybe you're sleeping back thinking about who would be my Taya Leone.
Well, that's the problem, though, is that because you know how my brain works, Jacqueline. So every time I watch that movie, I think, OK, I don't want to wake up. I mean, it'd be nice to wake up next to, you know, his wife. But then you realize, oh, no, I procreated. Oh, God. And so as much as that might suck, then he's got the dog. And so if you give me the dog versus my other life where I'm wealthy, but I don't have a dog, that's where I love watching that movie because I don't know which decision I'm making at the end of the day. I don't know if I'm going back, disappointing Don Cheadle, by the way. I'd also don't want to get on his bad side, but I'd be disappointing Don Cheadle if I went back to my wealthy life. But then maybe am I disappointing myself because I'm going back to my family, which I never wanted to start.
Damn.
It's a real conundrum as I'm looking at Molly the Wonder Dog giving me the eyes.
I love it. Hey, look, being conflicted about it is probably the best way to be at this point.
Okay. Any pushback on either one of the national treasures being rotten? Because I think that's a crime against humanity.
I think first one definitely should be fresh. Absolutely. Yes. The first one's a lot of fun. It's one of his more brisk action films. It goes through very quickly. It also has John Voight, who's also Cuckoo Bananas. So it's just a lot of fun. And it's also like, it's a better version of the Da Vinci Code.
Yeah. I mean, that's not saying much though.
Yeah. But if we go, if we're looking at like the genre of these movies all want to be the next Indiana Jones, I think that talk about Angelina Jolie, the Tomb Raiders are in the conversation. The new Tomb Raiders in the conversation. Tom Holland running around with Mark Wahlberg and Uncharted is now in the conversation. You have those Brendan Fraser mummy movies. I'll take National Treasure over all of them because Nick Cage, again, gets to sometimes be crazy, but also show that he's grounded. But then we also get the stellar comedic relief of Justin Bartha, who is the unsung hero of both of those movies. His lines are so, so good. Sean Bean's a villain? Come on. That's a great family adventure movie.
Yes, absolutely. And if I believe, was one of the first films that started the trend of Sean Bean dying in popular things, right? Like, he had died in other things before that, but this set the trend because he died in Goldeneye first. But like, this was where it was like, you know, you need to like do it three times before you realize it's not a mistake. That was like the third time where like, this is not a mistake. They just like killing this fool.
Yeah. Lord of the Rings, Fellowship of the Ring. And then you get to eventually Game of Thrones. You're just like, Jesus, Sean, who's your representation?
Exactly. Yeah, that's right. Goldeneye, Lord of the Rings. And then by the time we get to National Treasure, like, this dude just likes to die.
National Treasure is 46%. National Treasure Book of Secrets, the sequel, is at 36%. And if you want more on why maybe we didn't get another National Treasure movie, Jacqueline and I had our guest from the New York Times on, Marlo Stern, about a year ago, Jacqueline. We're getting long in the tooth with this thing, but we were talking other Nick Cage movies, and he basically broke down that like after the second National Treasure movie, Nick Cage was already interested in these weird antiquities and like going all over the world like looking for dinosaur bones and stuff. He was looking for the Holy Grail, Brandon. I don't know if you know any of this. He was looking for the Holy Grail, and he ended up in Vermont. He was very close, and for some reason, his map led him to Vermont. Now, as a guy who's in New York, I think it's safe to say that the Holy Grail is nowhere near New England.
No, not at all.
Yeah. Yes. Honestly, I just appreciate the TARS for him trying. It takes a certain level of arrogance and stupidity to be like, you know what? I'm getting it.
We all want to do it. We all want to be the one.
2,000 years later, I'm going to figure it out.
But I think that's what he does, though. I think he figures it out. He doesn't say no to a project. And I think, like, he'll just read a script blindly, like, that he's agreed to by his agent and be like, yeah, I'll figure this out. Oh, it's supposed to play a lizard man? Sure. Like, lizard man running a diner in Minnesota. Yep, I can make this work.
I did.
I dig it. I dig it.
I did everyone a favor today because, full disclosure, recently I got to do more Nick Cage research because I was doing, for my show Versus, which you can watch on Peacock, it was Bruce Willis versus Nicolas Cage. And so, you know, going through box office and tomato meter and all these things, and the deciding round, I decided to watch a movie from both Bruce Willis and Nick Cage's library that are 0% on the tomato meter. Literally 0%. And so the one that I chose for Nick Cage is a movie called Left Behind. And if you haven't seen Left Behind, it's just, it's a million things that are so ridiculously stupid, but it is so much fun. And that's one of the reasons why I took Nick Cage over Bruce Willis to win that Versus, spoiler alert, is just because he goes for it and he can do more things, like we're talking about earlier, than what Bruce Willis can. So I guess my question is, what's like the worst Nick Cage movie y'all have ever seen? What's the movie where you said that movie's terrible? Maybe Nick Cage was good in it, but like the worst Nick Cage movie.
For me, it would be Snake Eyes. I think like there was just nothing on that in that movie for me to grab. And I saw it in the movie theater because, again, my mom used to take me to R-rated movies. And then she wonders why I'm all warped.
You got a cool mom taking you to see Snake Eyes.
She was out of control. I just remember like not caring. Like, it's spoiler alert, Gary Sinise is the bad guy. And I was like, oh, Lieutenant Dan's the bad guy. Like, I couldn't see that a mile away because he has snake eyes. And I was just like, I don't like this movie. It was, and it's, Phil, I don't know how long it is. I think it's a little over 2 hours. And it felt like it. Like, I just couldn't wait for it to be over.
My the worst movie Nick Cage ever made is The Death of Superman, the one that he was supposed to make with Kevin Smith that they never made. And that's the worst because it didn't get made. And I still hear about it every single time. That is the one that I will say is the worst because it should have been made. And it's a travesty, if nothing else, for the fact that I think it would have made it would have made Superman Returns look like a masterwork. Like, I have a feeling we escaped the worst B movie ever in existence, but it would have been funny.
And you know the story behind like this, he wanted a spider. John Peters was producing, he wanted a spider, and then it ended up going to Wild Wild West. Like, there's so much craziness around that movie. And Nicolas Cage and the test suit with the mullet. He has another mullet as Clark Kent. Yep. And it's you're absolutely right, Jacqueline.
Yeah, and shout out to our late buddy John Schnepp, who made that documentary, The Death of Superman Lives, What Happened. Yep. You can check it out on Blu-ray. Brandon, I want you to do me a favor here. I want you to complete this sentence. If Nick Cage stars in Superman Lives,
all the box office records are broken.
I mean, look, this was before we really knew what we were doing with comic book movie franchises. We knew how to make a standalone. Christopher Reeve had done it. Michael Keaton did it with Batman, but we weren't really in these shared universes yet. Is there a chance that Superman Lives does that for us? Or do you think that that's just like a one-off Superman movie? Because if it does well, you know, we're getting a sequel with even more crazy John Peters creations.
If we had gotten Superman Lives and it was huge and then we got sequels, we would not have the comic book movies we have now. That's the thing. It would literally change cinematic history if that happened.
I think it would have been worse than the Star Wars special from 1978. I'm sorry. Like, it would have been bad. I just have no faith that would have been a good movie. He didn't even look good in the costume.
You don't think it would have been entertaining,
I've seen
the though?
Doc, and like, first
it
of all,
it would have been watchable,
like,
for some reason.
He's wearing that Con Air hair, but it's dyed jet black in the suit fitting that's in Schnepp's movie. Like, it's just like, I think everyone got out of that one alive.
I mean,
I say the same thing about the George Miller Justice League because the guy that was going to play Batman, I think, in that one has basically been cut out of the promotional materials of the last two movies he's made. So that would have been a very different Justice League as well, too. So, like, I don't know, but I'm not saying that everyone in it didn't want to make a good movie. I'm saying at that time they just did not have the manpower to do it.
I think though, the world being robbed of Tim Burton and Nicolas Cage working together on a movie though, more than warrants potentially going in a time machine and making this happen.
Don't disagree. Look, and that was Tim Burton at his prime. So I will have effort that Tim Burton is great, but
I want to see the movie. I think that's one of those movies where whether it's great or whether it's terrible, we do want to make sure that we get to see it at some point. We never will, but it's just one of those like alternate universe. If I put you in a multiverse and you can go see all these other movies what if Richard Gere had said yes to Die Hard before Bruce Willis got a chance? Or what if Nicolas Cage ended up being Superman? What if Christopher Walken ended up getting cast as the original Superman or Han Solo, something like that? I think that Superman Lives is up there with a movie that we would all want to go see. And Nick Cage has proven once again with Pig that he still has a lot of that great actor in him. He's got a couple movies coming out later this year. So Brandon, I want to talk to you about your podcast Medium Popcorn, but before we get there, just as a final word, favorite Nick Cage movie of all time, regardless of tomato meter, anything else, favorite Nick Cage movie of all time is what?
Ooh, that's tough. Okay, I'm going with The Wicker Man just because
he's going Wicker
there's
Man.
There's so many sound bites and moments that I'm thinking about dropping my jaw now just thinking about them. I mean, when he's in a bear costume and just starts punching people and he's running and then he still gets caught and then they torture him and then you see the digital bees and him and you realize how he had to react with digital bees stinging him, and it's just it's so much fun. If you embrace who Nicolas Cage is and what he brings to the table, it is just so much fun. It's like a warm blanket.
Jacqueline, your favorite Nick Cage movie of all time?
My favorite Nick Cage movie of all time, I guess it says something about my twisted nature, but I guess leaving Las Vegas. I really do love Leaving Las Vegas. It is twisted. He does go full Cage in that movie, just a different kind of full Cage. I love him in that. Pig is up there as well for me as well. Also Mandy is up there for me as well. So
yeah, Mandy's one of those movies where like, I can't recommend it to all my friends, but like, if you know your friend well enough and you think they're going to like Mandy, they end up raving about it. So yeah. Mandy's up there for me. I'm not going to put Mandy as like my favorite Nick Cage movie. Raising Arizona is a contender. And that was one of the first movies where we got to see Nick Cage, because basically when he signed on to do that movie, the Coen brothers sort of let him do what he wanted to do. And I think that he was quoted as saying that he was just trying to basically be the human version of Woody Woodpecker right down to the hair. And to their credit, the Coen brothers were like, cool, dude, run with it. I think my favorite Nick Cage movie of all time is still going to be The Rock. I just think it's one of the great action movies of all time. But I will give a major shout to Raising Arizona as well, Brandon.
I do want to give two honorable mentions, perfect though. One. Kick-Ass. He was phenomenal in that first one.
Yes.
He was awesome. Yeah. And then there's this movie in the early 90s called It Could Happen to You with Bridget Fonda.
Yeah.
That I used to watch all the time. Like, I'm a sucker for like romantic comedies. And I believe Rosie Perez was in it too. And I just...
Yep.
Yeah. Like, you know, Rosie being a young Perez, boy, I was
Stanley
just like, I love...
Stanley Tucci? Yep. Stanley Tucci's in that one as well too.
Yeah, I was a sucker for, and also my family used to do this thing where like every week they would play the lottery, and the way I guess to make me not think that they were degenerates, they were like, hey, Brandon, you know, if we win this lottery, we're going to buy a new house and all these things. I'm like, oh, cool. And then in this movie, Nicolas Cage won the lottery and I saw all the good things he was doing. I was like, if I win the lottery, I'm going to be like Nicolas Cage, minus being a cop.
Yeah, we all think we're going to be generous with our lottery money until we see the winning numbers, and then
so good.
Things. But I mean, I maybe if one of us wins the lottery, we should finance a Nick Cage movie just because we'd all have such a good time doing it.
I don't disagree. And hey, listen, he has a similar model to what Bruce does, which is basically if you can get him out in a couple of days, he'll do it. And he does
knock out those scenes over a week and then make the movie around him, and there's your, cut print ship. And then every so often he can crank out another Oscar contender like what we saw with Pig. So, Brandon, I'm not going to give all the credit to Nick Cage for you starting your podcast where you talk movies, you review movies, you review some old movies, maybe some cult classics that people have missed. What was sort of the inspiration behind starting Medium Popcorn, and why not go large popcorn?
Yeah, so I started the podcast actually by myself, but then I realized very quickly it's lonely to podcast and talk about movies just by yourself. And so my friend Justin, he and I had done sketch comedy. We met in college. We known each other for years. And I already like had experience podcasting. I was like, hey, man, like, you know, we can vibe about anything. We could talk about anything that comes up, like, let's do this together. And we create a theme song. And that's kind of what started, like, gave us the idea to be like, oh, we have something here. So folks, Medium Popcorn, I will say, has the best theme song on any podcast. It's a cover of Easy Lover by Phil Collins. It's fantastic. Check it out. But yeah, like the idea was just for us to essentially be like friends talking about whatever movies we felt like reviewing. And that's what a lot of people that follow us and support us, they say. It's like being my group of friends, hearing them talk about the movies. And sometimes they share the same feelings I have. And sometimes they're completely off base, but I still enjoy the conversation. And we do go down some weird rabbit holes, especially when we talk about like insane films, like anything Nicolas Cage. You know, we always have a lot of fun doing that, or just anything that has like absurd moments, or clearly, like, you know, there's a shoestring budget. And so we talk about, hey, like, we know what the filmmakers are trying to do because we've been on sets before, we're actors, but then also, you know, you kind of drop the ball here in post or something like that. Yeah. So, but we do new and old films. It's always a variety. There's no specific theme. So it keeps us and the listeners on their toes.
And
I dig it.
Jacqueline, you should probably at some point check out Medium Popcorn to see what they have to say about the Nick Cage movies that are coming up that you've already seen that you are being very tight-lipped about.
Not very tight-lipped about. Probably going to get in trouble. We're going to have a conversation with Brian Perez to make sure I don't get banned from seeing movies ever again. But very excited either way.
All right. Well, that is Medium Popcorn. And again, is that your snack when you go to the movies? Because I'm a very traditionalist. I'm a popcorn. I might do a little bit of butter if I'm feeling frothy, but I'll get a diet beverage of some sort and a popcorn, and I'm good to go.
I think medium is also the reason why we chose that size is because that's usually the average rating for most part for a lot of our films. But also, like, that's the healthiest option we both concluded in regards to getting the medium. Because if you go large or beyond that, you might have some problems or people might look at you sideways. So medium across the way.
Don't dig
something
that
about holding that bucket, Jacqueline. What were you calling me out for? My
hate that you're a purist of popcorn, because I've explained to you how no butter, jalapenos and Parmesan cheese is the way to go. And every time I mention that to you, you think I'm crazy, but small popcorn with jalapenos, it's better for you.
Brandon's giving you a look too.
A little bit of Parmesan cheese. It is popcorn nachos.
Not on my popcorn. Like on nachos. I used to work at a movie theater. That was my first job ever, actually, was in a movie theater. Yeah. And my favorite thing besides popcorn would be the melted, you know, movie theater cheese and then some jalapenos, especially if they were like freshly cut jalapenos. Oh my God.
Yes. Movie, not the softy ones. Yeah.
Queso. It was my introduction to queso, and it was when I saw Batman 1989, and my entire world changed. My athletic career might have taken a dip, but my entire movie-going career would never be the same, and none of us would ever be the same after seeing any of those great Nick Cage movies that we just talked about. So once again, he is Brandon Collins. You can check out his podcast wherever you enjoy podcasts. How you're listening to us, you can listen to him on Medium Popcorn, or check out and subscribe to his YouTube channel so you can see him and Justin talk all things new movies, old movies, things that you missed. It's a great endeavor you're doing, and it reminds me of a bygone show called Schmoes Know, and keep on carrying the torch, my man. And we loved having you on the show.
Appreciate it. Thank you all so much for having me on. Anytime to talk about Mr. Cage is always a good time.
It was so much fun talking with Brandon, getting to connect with him. And we really find that we see eye to eye on most of these Nick Cage action movies. You're Gone in 60 Seconds, your Face Offs, obviously, Con Air, The Rock. But then Jacqueline and Brandon both just leaving me high and dry with Family Man. Maybe, you know what, I'll watch it again at Christmas and maybe I'll see if I'm wrong, but pretty sure I'm right on that one. So Simon West, as I teased at the top, the director of Con Air, got his start doing some commercials, but he also did a very famous music video that you've definitely seen, usually when you didn't want to. Sorry to Rickroll everyone. He directed the video for Rick Astley, Never Gonna Give You Up. So apologies for the earworm, but it's going to be in your head the rest of the week. Again, my bad. But if you want something good, then you can check out Rotten Tomatoes Is Wrong, particularly coming up when we do our Hook episode. We are so excited to talk about Hook. It's been one of these bonanza episodes that we've wanted to do for a long time. It's one of the very few Spielberg-directed movies that's rotten on his tomato meter resume. And if you want us to do Hook, send us a video recording of you telling us why you love Hook, why you think Rotten Tomatoes got Hook right. It can run the gamut of suggestions, but I know that there's a lot of Hook defenders out there. One of them may not be talking right now, but you can email us anytime, whether it's about Hook or any other mailbag you want to get to us. You have thoughts about what movies we should be talking about coming up here on the show. Just hit us up at rtiswrong@rottentomatoes.com. Subscribe, rate, review, do all that great stuff. And on behalf of Jacqueline Coley, our special guest, Brandon Collins, producer Lucy, and our esteemed engineer, Brian Perez, I am merely Mark Ellis saying thanks for watching. You can get upcoming comedy tickets for Where I'm on Tour at markellis.live. And we'll see you next time right here on Rotten Tomatoes is Wrong.